This is a sound belonging to the ages. Civilization adds new sounds and changes old. But the sound of water moving with the wind is forever the same. This wind that blows from water to land is tempered by water. Now, as it was in the beginning. In ages too early for history and legend, the Earth's crust moved in ways known to the science geology, causing an arm to reach up from Wisconsin into the waters of the Great Lakes. The community which grew on this peninsula took its character from the waters and from the air tempered by the waters. Ships are a part of this community, ships that come from yards where noisy machinery magnifies the strength of men. Men with machines mold cargo carriers for the Great Lakes. Without the surrounding waters, this would not be. The waters of this community are populated not only with cargo carriers, they're also pleasure craft of people vacationing, people who attracted by water that reaches to the horizon. People who bring $9 million into the community each year. Another type of craft seen in the waters of this community travels in a convoy of seagulls. Out of the bays and inlets, gulls follow the commercial fisherman to and from his nets, feeding on the remnants of his catch. And here is the sound of the cherry industry, which provides a colorful 35% of the community's agricultural income. But the sounds of the resort industry, of commercial fishing, of the cherry business, and of shipbuilding, these sounds would not be without the surrounding waters. The waters are Green Bay and Lake Michigan. Together, they form the common denominator of our story.
The State Broadcasting Service presents the Door County Profile, another in a series of programs about Wisconsin people and places, a series designed to show how people live in the cities, towns, and counties of our state. These programs are prepared by state network production teams and documented by tape recordings. Here is the story of Door County, as told by the people who live there and by Carl Schmidt, narrator-producer.
That bell is a signal to get out of the way. 200 tons are on the move and in your direction.
This is what they call a gantry crane. It's set on extra heavy railroad tracks. Has a carrying capacity of 65 tons. We do all our installation with a gantry crane on our barge. It has a 125-foot boom. We use it for setting boats up to about 60 ton in the water.
The gantry crane, 200 tons of animated steel reaching nearly 200 feet into the air, a landmark in Sturgeon Bay, the county seat of Door County. Around it are the other machines, the buildings, and the man of the Christie Corporation. Standing in the shadow of the crane, we talked with Bernard Leno, secretary and general manager of the shipyard, about the corporation's current project.
Well, at the present moment, we're in the process of building a soybean oil tanker for the cargo grain company, and also a towboat or tug to go with the tanker as a unit. It's a new innovation. The tug fits into a notch, literally a notch in the stern of the barge. It is used for pushing the barge on its travels through the Welland Canal going between Chicago and New York. When it's out in open water on the lakes, the tug will go around to the bow of the boat and pull it.
Leaving the noises of construction, we followed Mr. Leno along the shipyard railway tracks to the air-conditioned office building. There we met L.E. Randall, vice president of the corporation. Mr. Randall spoke of the value of shipbuilding to the community.
In the past 2 years, the Christie Corporation take-home payrolls have been in the neighborhood of $2 million. Employment is about 200 people during the summer season. Irrespective of the weather, this discussion includes May to November as the summer season. And the employment is doubled during the winter months. Directly, this payroll probably affects the economy of at least 1,000 of the total Door County population, or about $1,000 per capita of this group each year. Indirectly, it is difficult to determine anyone in the county who does not share in some way by the efforts of the people working at the yard through taxes, insurance, utilities, food, clothing, shelter, recreation, and so forth.
And from Mr. Leno.
The next major project is going to be the car ferry for the Chesapeake and Ohio Railroad. Incidentally, that's one of the largest car ferries ever built, and possibly the largest boat ever built on Lake Michigan.
The car ferry contract is worth $5 million. A graphic illustration of the importance of shipbuilding to Door County. $5 million brought in by the waterway. Traveling north from Sturgeon Bay, you can choose Highway 57 along Lake Michigan or 42 on the Green Bay side. If you're on vacation, chances are you'll find whatever you want somewhere along one of these highways. You may choose to stay at one of 43 American Plan hotels or one of 110 housekeeping cottage resorts. Perhaps you arrived early enough to get a choice camping spot in one of the state parks.
One of the most popular campgrounds in Peninsula State Park. Developed an intense rivalry among campers who returned year after year for preferred spots near the shoreline. So much so that finally they kept coming earlier and earlier, and finally the park had to be formally opened to camping on one given night, May 1st, or midnight to April 31st. And now tourists come with their trailers far in advance of the season, take housekeeping cottages overnight, gas up the cars and have the motor running, and at midnight they leap out of their cottages and into the cars and go tearing away for their favorite campground.
That was Duncan Thorpe speaking from the very busy Door County Chamber of Commerce office. His concern is to help you find a satisfactory place to stay during your vacation or a satisfactory place to fish.
We catch three main varieties up here. Smallmouth bass is probably the number one, and we frequently say that we're the world's fastest smallmouth bass fishing area. I don't know how we could prove that or how anyone could disprove it. So it's one of those statements that we make because we're enthusiastic about our fishing.
But maybe you don't take your fishing seriously.
Most people who go fishing are going for a day or a half a day's outing on a boat. That's the primary thing. The fishing is just something to do while they're there. And if they catch a few fish, why, they're happy about it. But they're not the type of person that will get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and stay out until sundown.
That was Tom Mayhew, a resort owner at Ephraim on the Green Bay side of the peninsula. Ephraim is one of the most popular resort towns in Door County.
Ephraim is a 100% resort area. You take the resorts out of Ephraim and... Ephraim would go back to the wilderness very rapidly.
Ephraim was established nearly 100 years ago by the Moravians, a Norwegian religious group. Their influence gave the town a characteristic almost unheard of in resort areas.
Being originally a religious settlement, the town was dry. It has remained so. Since the repeal of the Prohibition Amendment, The question of wet or dry has come up and was overwhelmingly defeated. We feel that many of the people who come to Ephraim come because there are no taverns. While they themselves may drink, they feel that they don't want to have their children hanging around taverns, and would prefer to either have a cocktail in their room or cottage or go out for it. And the village is dry, as I said, and always has been, and frankly, I think it always will be.
North of Ephraim, past Sister Bay and Ellison Bay, Highway 42 runs to the water's edge at Gill's Rock. There you board a ferry and cross the Door, from which the county gets its name. Death's Door, they call it, remembering a legend. A legend of the 300 Indian warriors who traveled by canoe to attack an enemy camp. The Indians were drowned when a storm blew them against a cliff. Larger boats have also perished here. The storms of 1871 destroyed 100 vessels. The Coast Guard now protects the boatmen from a station on Plum Island in the middle of the Door. The ferry boat is moving to the northeast, and before you lies Washington Island.
On the sand beach of Rock Island, all along the southern shore, stood a white man's thriving village of 300 souls or more. Coming in the 1830s, sailing vessels brought them down from Chicago to establish here Door County's northern town.
You examine a large-scale map of the island. Close to it, on the south, is Detroit Island, and Rock Island lies to the northeast. Around the islands on the map are clustered many white squares, identification tags for places on Washington Island. One of them reads Indian Museum.
Often Indians would visit. They had buried here their dead. Now the tombstone of the pale face told a white man's name since death.
Somewhere you remember reading that Washington Island contains more Indian relics than any other area in Wisconsin. The boat docks at Detroit Harbor and you head for the museum. There you meet a member of the Wisconsin State Historical Society. Curator of the museum, you may choose to call him. But he's more than that. Because with his own hands he built it and collected the contents. And when he speaks to you proudly of Washington Island, you suspect that he's been here for a long time.
Well, he's going on 70 years.
Jens Jacobson, age 83.
I was born on an island that belonged to Denmark, the island Als. It was under Germany when I was born, and that's how it come. My first school was in the German language, and my folks were Danes, so I learned the Danish language. And when I found out I was coming to America, well, I thought it was good to get a little of the American language.
A little of the American language is a very modest claim. Jens Jacobson has written a history in verse of early Door County days. The verses you heard a moment ago were from a poem dealing with early settlers who came here to escape malaria.
Where Chicago now stands, that was a swamp. And people that lived there, they simply had to get away for they got malaria. And they had long ago, they had discovered that by coming to Rock Island, they would get over it without any medicine. Those people, they came here shaking with malaria. And they got over it in a remarkable short time, for this climate up here is death on malaria.
The climate up here is death on malaria. Fever victims were the first to come to Door County for their health. Today, more than 100 years later, you too may be coming here for your health. Malaria probably doesn't bother you, but hay fever is uncomfortably common these days, and pollen doesn't travel with the winds that blow from Green Bay and Lake Michigan.
On the sand beach of Rock Island, all along the southern shore, stood a white man's thriving village of 300 souls or more. Coming in the 1830s, sailing vessels brought them down from Chicago to establish here Door County's northern town.
You pull out the map which brought you here, and above Indian Museum you write, Jens Jacobson, poet, historian, archaeologist, philosopher. In the summer of 1850, a woman carried a basket of clothes to a shady spot on the Door County shoreline, built a fire under a kettle on a fireplace of rocks, boiled the clothes, and rinsed them in the clear water of Green Bay. 100 years later, another woman carried a basket of clothes to the Door County shoreline.
Well, anyone who has an automatic washer certainly would laugh at what I did this morning. I took the clothes and put them in the lake to soak. And then I built a fire in a fireplace and put a washtub on top. And I filled the washtub with lake water. When it was hot, I took the clothes out of the lake and put them in the hot water in the washtub. Then I have a plunger, and I plunged and plunged. And finally, I thought they had cooked enough. And I took them out of the tub and put them back into the lake and rinsed them. And I didn't have to worry about running water because it changed continually. Then I just wrung them out and hung them up. And I think the sun is going to bleach them beautifully white.
Clean clothes out of the bay, bleaching in the sun. Clean clothes by an old method. A refreshing method fostered by a refreshing point of view.
Well, we do go primitive here. Maybe we come up here and do it that way so that when we go home, why, we appreciate all the comfort.
In Jens Jacobsen, you met the warmth of an older generation. And here you found something akin to it in the generation of Mrs. Robert Grogan, who comes to Door County from Milwaukee to wash clothes in the bay and to pick wild strawberries under the trees on the cliff. Out of this life comes a comfortable philosophy of relaxation.
You don't have to hurry. There's all day to do it. And if you don't finish it today, there's always tomorrow. You just come and forget all your worries and relax and enjoy yourself and go home very much refreshed and be able to meet all the problems that come and fall.
A philosophy of relaxation. An attitude nourished on air cleaned and cooled by the waters of Green Bay and Lake Michigan. You find this attitude in the younger generation, too. They don't define it, but they radiate it.
We have a crew of three, a skipper and two crewmen. I have two boys for crew members. All the boats up here are skippered by girls, most of them.
How does this happen?
Well, it seems like the girls are the fortunate ones, the ones that have the boats.
Alice Larson, teenager, skipper, proud owner of several trophies. Perhaps you can sense the gleam in her eyes as she describes her boat and its suit of sails.
I have a Lightning. It's a 19-foot knockabout sloop. There's a main, the jib, and the balloon spinnaker.
Alice Larson can speak of sailing with more familiarity than most because her father is a sailmaker. He learned the trade in his father's sail loft in Sweden, and he came to America in 1913.
I was only supposed to come over here and see how you were doing work here. But after staying here a while, I liked it so well that I got married here and stayed.
William Larson worked for sailmakers on the East Coast until World War II, when he joined the Navy and served in Hawaii. After the war, he started his own sail loft in Sturgeon Bay. His partner in business is Lillian, his elder daughter.
When Daddy came back from Hawaii, I got tired of working in New York, so I came out and started working for him. This is more interesting, though.
William and Lillian Larson, sailmakers. And to their office come orders from all over the world.
Our business comes from all over the country.
I even have some of my old customers out east, and I got very good customers down in Florida. And I send sales to New Orleans, and I send sales out to Oregon, Washington. I have sent sail to India, to Philippine Islands, and of course, the most of my trade is around the lakes. If anybody likes your work, I don't think it matter where you are. If they care for your workmanship, they will come to you no matter if you were up in Alaska, I think.
There are no sails on the boats that belong to the next part of our story. Seagulls don't travel with sailboats. Instead, they've learned that food is thrown from ungraceful, dull gray boats of commercial fishermen. The seagulls don't seem to mind the change of diet they've encountered during the past 10 years. The seagull is a scavenger, and to him the inside of a whitefish differs little from the inside of a trout. The seagull doesn't remember the early days of lake fishing when a man could catch 50 trout in a day using hook and line. Some 40 years ago, the locks opened to let a boat into the Great Lakes. With the boat came a snake-like creature that attached itself to a trout, cut through the small scales, and began sucking out life. That was 40 years ago. Today...
There ain't a trout left.
Well, that's on Tom the Lamper, of course. They've killed them off.
Well, the government had done something about that here a few years ago, and you'd have had something, you know, but they waited too damn long. There ain't a trout left.
Well, I don't know how they could ever wipe them out anyway, you know. They've gotten an awful start. They claim down on Lake Huron you can't get a fish that's fit to market anymore, Harley. Down on Connor the Lamper, he's killed them all off.
In Hibbert's Creek in 1945, we caught 86. And in 1946, 125. In 47, 596. 1948, 1,000. 49, 1,600. In 1950, 5,413.
Statistics from Matt Patterson of the Conservation Department on the frightening multiplication of the lamprey eel. Statistics for one eel trap in a Door County river. The multiplication will probably continue until conservation biologists can find the weak link in the lamprey's life cycle, a weak link that can be effectively attacked. The job is a tremendous one, and it'll take the cooperation of many people outside of the conservation department. Meanwhile, in the absence of trout, Door County fishermen are turning to the chub and the whitefish. Almost as many licenses are sold now as in the days of the trout, and the catch is nearly as large, according to the statistics. But statistics can't erase the pathos in the voice of the fisherman.
I'm a commercial fisherman, and I've fished for about 45 years. Mm-hmm. Ever since I started, I've always fished. Years ago, when I first started fishing, maybe we'd get 3-4 whitefish in a year. And now today, we get all whitefish and no trout. And the trout is gone, of course, because the lamper killed them off.
With trout thinning out, the lamprey turns to other victims, less desirable ones, like the thick-scaled whitefish.
They get on the whitefish, but on account of the scale, I think it ain't as bad. You see, trout, you know, he had a small scale. As soon as he got a hold, well, he could go right through. But a whitefish, you know, he gets on that scale, and he got to get that scale off before he can get in. Mm-hmm. And that ain't so easy. And I suppose maybe he can't hang on so good on that scale either. Oh, they kill plenty of whitefish.
But even if the whitefish survives, and even if the chub catch maintains the Door County fishing industry at its present healthy level, fishing will never be the same to the men who grew up with the trout. Fins and gills and scales make only a fish. Nostalgia makes a trout. The time is noon. They come in on a fleet of trucks. They come to eat vegetables and meat. One can't live all day on cherries. They range in age from 8 to 60. They come from many states and countries.
It looks like we'll have about 1,400 harvest hands at the peak of our season. Then our camp will consist of about 225 Texas Mexicans made up of about 85 families. From San Antonio, Uvalde, Eagle Pass, and Laredo. We have one small group of Indians from the Flambeau Reservation, 133 Jamaicans, 200 Bahamans that are recruited through our Wisconsin labor pool. In addition to the number already mentioned, we will have 250 sugar beet workers from up near the Menominee and Superior sugar beet areas. And our camp now consists of about 540 white people, what we consider regulars, who come from year to year. A good many of these are from Iron Mountain, Upper Michigan, and Wisconsin points. These people also work in the factory on two shifts of about 100 on each shift.
That was Walter Tunnell, chairman of the Wisconsin Cherry Commission and manager of the world's largest cherry orchard, Martin Brothers, near Sturgeon Bay. Here are some of the people he was talking about.
Murray Olawas, Manistic, Michigan.
And who are these people with you?
My two brothers and my girlfriend. Should I tell them what the names are?
And what made you decide to come here?
I liked it. I came up here last year.
What did you do last year?
I worked in the factory, but I picked for 1 week.
And what are you doing this year?
Working in the factory.
When did you come?
Saturday afternoon.
Are you all going to stay?
No, my two brothers are leaving today.
They're leaving?
Yes, they're going home.
How come?
I guess they're lonesome. One's lovesick, I think.
Oh, really? Let's talk to him. See
okay.
Why are you leaving?
Too quiet around here.
Too quiet?
Mm-hmm.
How's Manistique? Where is it?
Manistique.
Manistique? How's it different?
Well, I don't know where to go there. I don't know where to go up here.
Oh. Well, does it have softball games, things like that?
Where?
Around here, movies, things?
No.
Not yet.
How come you're going?
Well, no, I don't know anybody up here, and there's nothing to do after you get through picking cherries.
Youngsters from Michigan, families from Texas.
My name is Martinez, mm-hmm. from San Antonio, Texas.
My name is Martinez. I follow him everywhere he goes. So we're just picking cherries, that's all I do. And I do the cooking, too.
We store on Rochelle, Illinois, on asparagus. That's the first job, and then we come the second job on the peas, and cherries be the third job we do. From here we go on corn.
Asparagus, peas, cherries, corn, in four different parts of the country. Which part do they like the best?
Well, here's the best place. We get all the recreation we can get. You see, on the other fields we don't get much recreation like we do here. We got everything here to enjoy, and so the kids, they got baseball teams, any kinds of games, basketball, football, soccer balls, and everything. So this is the best place.
That took care of work and recreation, so we asked about education. Mr. and Mrs. Martinez told us about their favorite teacher.
She teaches the kids to stay at home, that don't work.
You see over there on the spiral, you see that. Yeah, they have to be 14 years old before they go to work on the field, see. So the rest of the kids stay home, and she teaches them. She's nice. She's nice teacher. She's nice to all the kids. All the kids like them.
Leaving home in the early spring and returning late in the fall, the children in these migratory families lose the beginning and end of their school year.
They start traveling from place to place in the early spring. They start going to different places. I would say the 1st of May or sometimes before. And when they get to a certain place, they only stay 3 or 4 weeks, and then they have to move again. And sometimes when they get to a new place, the schools are closed or almost over, and sometimes there is no place for them to attend school. And that's why they miss school all the year around.
And that school can only be provided through special effort. For migratory workers, a migratory teacher.
I teach English, numbers, and also I teach them how to write and how to read, how to sing and how to play together, too.
Her name is Lilia Curti.
My home is in Mexico City.
She belongs to the Home Missions Council of North America, an organization supported by 23 different church denominations.
When I finished my college in Mexico, I decided to learn English, and I did. And later I thought that I had more opportunity to serve God after I learned my English. And one of my brothers graduated from Trinity University in San Antonio, Texas, and one of his teachers told him about this kind of work, so he came, and he's been working for 4 summers already. And once he went back home, and he told me about this work, so I got very excited, and I made plans, and I came. And this is my second summer doing this work.
And this work does not consist of teaching English to citizens of Lilia Kuti's own country. Listen to this and draw a paradox.
Well, they are Mexicans, but they were born in the United States, so they are citizens of this country, and they live in Texas, most of them.
There's your paradox. A citizen of Mexico learning English in order to teach it to citizens of the United States. Mechanization has moved through America into nearly every walk of life. There are a few exceptions, and the cherry industry embraces both the rule and the exception. No machine has been found to replace the human hand in the delicate job of picking cherries. But as soon as the cherry is separated from the tree, a mechanical whirlwind takes over. The sounds you hear in the background now are from a cherry processing plant. People are working among the machines, but their voices are submerged in the noise of metal against metal. 95% of Door County's cherries are packed by the growers in their own plants, or in the plant of the Fruit Growers Cooperative, the largest organization of its kind in America. One of the largest private plants is in the Reynolds Orchard near Sturgeon Bay. There we talked with Don Reynolds about packing plant employees.
Well, the number of employees here, of course, varies with the rapidity with which the cherries come into the plant. On those days when we are receiving our maximum quantity of cherries per day, we run from 600 to 700,000 pounds every 24 hours. That requires a double shift of both men and women. We will use somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 men and about 300 women in this plant alone. The principal use for women is in the sorting of the cherries. All of the cherries that come into the plant are sized mechanically and then must be sorted by the human eye and the human hand, and at that work we use women. We also use them in several other jobs where the work is not heavy, such as putting cans into the runways and filling the cans, things of that nature, but the men do the heavy work.
Also, a few comments on the 1950 cherry crop.
Well, the cherry crop this year is considerably better than it was last year. We do not think that it will reach the size of the bumper crop in 1948, or perhaps even that of 1946, but it is a beautiful crop. Cherries are of excellent quality, and because of the fine rains we have, we think they're going to be the finest pack that we've ever put up here in our plant at Sturgeon Bay.
That's the sound of the last machine to which the cherries are subjected in the processing plant. Its function is to put staples in crates before they're loaded on a truck. There's finality even in the sound of this machine. A teenage boy was running the machine. We asked his name. He couldn't answer. His mouth was full of cherries. If you live in Door County or if you've traveled through the miles of orchards, you can hardly imagine Door County without a cherry industry. People give little thought to the origins of things existing for a long time in large quantities. And such considerations are probably unnecessary, but they're certainly interesting. It's interesting, for example, to note that if Door County had the climate of nearly any other portion of the state, Wisconsin would have no cherry industry. Why?
Well, I think that the old-timers would tell you that the reason why Door County was selected as an area to grow cherries and the reason why it is adapted to growing of cherries is because of the geographical location. The peninsula here is pretty well surrounded by water, and we think that in the spring of the year, the effect of this water, and of course, we have ice in the bay here, by the way, till about the middle of April many years, that it does hold back the development of our fruit and the fruit buds so that they do not bloom and then are not injured by late frost.
And your name, please?
My name is G.I. Mullendore, better known as Mully. I'm county and council agent of Door County. Been here about 14 years.
Another statement by Mr. Mullendore might indicate that the cherry industry is a bit overemphasized in Door County.
Probably year in and year out, a dairying might have it over fruit growing in terms of total income to the county.
So, in terms of Door County, the milk check is the more important. But a comparison with other Wisconsin counties reveals that in total income from milk, Door County ranks 68th. So, without fruit growing, Door County would be only an average agricultural community. And the fruit industry would not be here except for the climate provided by Green Bay and Lake Michigan. These waters, then, have been the common denominator of our story. They formed the background for a silhouette of elements important to Door County. Elements which combine to give this community a unique character. Others may choose another background and cast a different silhouette. But when the other stories are told, the waters will still be there with a sound belonging to the ages. Civilization adds new sounds and changes old, but the sound of water moving with the wind is forever the same. And the wind that blows from water to land is tempered by water, now as it was in the beginning.
This has been the Door County Profile, one in a recorded series on Wisconsin communities. Production and narration by Carl Schmidt, technical assistance by Ben Rossi, and the script was written by Les Nelson. This is the Wisconsin College of the Air.